from the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
I keep looking for something, even though I know that it's not there. And every time I try to figure it out, you're the only thing I can think about.
It's Tuesday, May 21st, 2019, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studios on the ones and twos, our illustrious engineer, my brother, Chandler Strang.
Hello.
On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, hanging on by a thread, Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Gatorland, Florida, Eddie Big Hat Koffeltz.
What's up, everybody?
And from Nashville, Tennessee, author, speaker, podcaster, cowgirl extraordinaire, Annie F. Downs.
Good morning, gents.
We are happy to be with you guys today. Jesse and I, late last night, returned from our annual trek in Montana.
That's right.
And I'm telling you, we barely made this one back.
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Yeah.
You guys were looking more barely than last year when you almost got eaten by an animal that was chasing you.
Oh, that's true. Well, Jesse, you had another animal run in this time.
I had a terrifying one. So I went for a run with a couple of guys, like a jog. And
like the mountain. I didn't join them. I was reading a book.
Yeah, we said, hey, drop us off at the top of this mountain, like 5 miles away, and we'll run back to the lodge, right, where we're staying. But in order to run back through the lodge, you have to run through this little town that is basically a gauntlet of stray, wild, very mean dogs. And so with us, we had one can of pepper spray, just in case it comes to that, which no one wants to pepper spray anybody, especially a dog. Like, that would just be a horrible thing to do. But we get to the bottom of the hill, where we've just run 4 miles down this hill, and we are, like, popping our necks. We're coming up with a game plan to John Wick it through the gauntlet of wild dogs. And
Wait. Sorry. So am I imagining... I need you to theater of the mind me for a second. Am I imagining, a ghost town run by dogs?
No. It's just a regular little town where there's, like, a general store and a little church and a couple of kind of diners, and that's it. There's not downtown. It's like dirt roads.
No.
It's like dirt roads and stuff. There's, like, three buildings, and that's your town, okay?
Yeah.
And then you go from that little area to the house, the lodge where we stay. It's just a two-lane country road,
yeah.
And every once in a while there might be a home, but the fencing is more for like horses, so it's like some barbed wire fencing with big gaps.
It's
and
like
stuff.
Theoretical. Okay. It's like suggestion fencing for a dog.
So, right. So like a dog, no problem. There's no fences basically.
Well,
and these families like live out in the middle of nowhere, so you have big outdoor dogs, and they're just kind of hanging out outside all the time.
Well, not only
I was
that.
Picturing that painting of all the dogs playing poker.
Yeah.
I was picturing that story.
No, running
through that kind of
town. No, these dogs are sociopaths.
An old-timey West town. No saloons. There was no saloon.
Okay, yeah, I was picturing a saloon full of dogs playing poker, but now I'm with you.
These dogs are sociopaths, and they like jumping through a barbed wire fence. They love it. They jump. Their hobbies, these dogs' hobbies are jumping through electrical fences, getting scraped purposely on barbed wire, and mauling people to death. Those are what these dogs like to do.
That's what they do for fun.
Though they've never mauled anyone previously. You just know.
No. There's been lots of dog bites, and that's why they say if you go down the mountain, you got to have pepper spray with you because these dogs. Yes, and so we come up to the first. There's a group of four of us.
Why did you volunteer to do this? Just out of curiosity. Just
health and wellness.
Knowing that. Okay, fair.
But it's for the adventure.
Fair. You just said okay, fair.
Can I? All right, here I'll say this. When we got down
so quickly, Chan.
When we got down the mountain and we're like preparing to go through town, and we knew that there was all these dogs just everywhere waiting for us. I'll say this. We were kind of joking around, like, this is going to be kind of exciting, trying to run the dog gauntlet. You know, the first big black pit bull we see that starts growling at us, that's when it's not fun anymore.
That's when
it's like, okay, this was a mistake. So we bundle up real tight together, all four of us walking as one large human in the eyes of the pit bull. One of the guys stares him down and he holds up the pepper spray. You can tell this was not that pit bull's first tango with the pepper spray. Like he backed down. We're like, okay, guys, we're fine. Suddenly we realized why that dog backed down, because we had crossed out of his territory into another dog's territory. We had gone through probably four or five dogs at this point and used various strategies to convince those dogs not to attack us. But it's like the end of a level of Super Mario Brothers where you come to boss dog at the end. Okay. No dog wanted to cross into boss dog's territory. This is how we know we're in trouble, Annie. And I swear this is true. We're sitting there and the dog is barking and growling at us. And there's a lot of horses everywhere. The dog jumps up and bites a horse. Like just to
right
show
in front
off.
Of you?
What?
The dog bit a horse.
Jesse.
As he's like staring at us just to show like, I ain't scared of you guys. Watch.
Like, watch me bite something.
I'm going to bite something that's 10 times as big as me. And he bit the horse right in the belly. And the horse is like looking at us like, thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for challenging him. So thank God. At that point, one of the guides that had been, you know, working at the lodge drove by in a pickup truck. We jumped in the back, got out of there. They said that later. That kid said later that when he drove back by the dog tried to attack the truck. The dog literally wanted Jeez. To fight an automobile after biting a horse.
I don't understand. Why do people want That's to wild. Own a dog like that?
Because they live on a country. Farm.
Land.
It's wild yeah. country out there. But Cameron, Thanks. I feel like that wasn't the Poor only horses. Brush with death that we had.
No. That, not even close. The main brush with death came on the last day
of the trip.
This is
always the weirdest trip you'll go on.
And we had a very chill few days. I'll just yeah. say it was the 3 days before we got to Montana. It was like 80 degrees. And when we got there, the high was in the 30s. It was rainy. There was thunderstorms. Yeah. It was snowing one day. I was not packed for this. So I didn't go out I didn't do a lot outside.
Quick
I mainly
question.
Hung out by the
sorry
fire.
Sorry to interrupt. Would there yeah. have been any way to find out the weather there? Or is it just, is this a special place where it doesn't
work?
Not
that part of the country. Dopplers. Dude, there's no Dopplers out
this
there.
This ain't Billings. I mean, Billings is your next day. That's
they
2 hours
know.
Away.
They don't know.
This is the plains. It changes day by day.
Eddie, you know how they judge how the weather is going to be tomorrow?
Right. It is.
So this is how they judge the weather out there, Eddie. They judge how irritable the dogs are. If the horse gets bit by the dog 3 times that day, it's probably going to be cold tomorrow. They know. Yeah. They go ahead and preemptively start biting horses out there. And you're like, oh, bundle up tomorrow. The dogs are biting horses again. So
anyway,
but
story.
The last day it got nicer out. And we thought, you know, we need to culminate. It was a great trip, great guys, a lot of connection, a lot of rest. It was just so much fun. But we wanted to culminate. Jess and I wanted to take it up a notch.
Yep.
And so they had gone the previous year, they had gone and found this kind of like shady fireworks place about an hour away. And so I was like, we got it. I brought cash. We've got to go. And so we filled up the truck with some guys and we drive an hour to go to this fireworks place, which we checked on the internet was open. It was Sunday. It was going to open until 8.
Oh, Eddie, he did check on the internet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was buried beneath a bunch of recent news stories about some nefarious activities that happened there. But it's open.
Okay. This is the place for people that don't know. We know for a fact has a dungeon underneath where they make homemade fireworks. Like we already know that fact. And that's why we drove an hour to there.
We arrive at 4:30 and the gates closed.
Oh,
And it has a handwritten sign on it with a phone number. And so
blew off my arm. Come back.
The guy who drove.
Can I preface about what that phone number said? It said shed questions, colon. And then it had a phone number because
shed
I think they're
questions.
Also running a shed business.
Well, yeah, there
now.
Were sheds. They had sheds for sale in the parking lot. And then they had their fireworks stand. And
good sheds,
whether
though.
You want, it said sheds, ? Fireworks, ? Here's a phone number. So we call it. And a guy answered who sounded elderly. And we said, we're here. And he goes, are you at the gate? And we said, yeah. And he said, well, my son must have closed up early. And then you could tell he was kind of thinking, what do I do? So he said, do y'all want to buy a lot of fireworks? And we're like, yes, like it'll be worth your while. That's what he's trying to assess. Would it be worth my while to come back? And he goes, all right, well, here, let me tell you what to do. Go back over the overpass back toward Hardin. And what you're going to do is you're going to see an old man on the side of the road wearing a red hat. That's me.
No.
Come pick me up.
That's his directions.
And so we
Find
drive back
man
into
in
Hardin
red hat.
And we come up on a guy wearing a red Donald Trump 16 hat.
Had to be.
That's like a country music
and,
song.
And he was like 90 years old. He said, we pull up. He said, well, I was just out for my Sunday walk. There's no sidewalks, mind you. This is a country highway. He's just in the middle of the road by himself. And he's out for a Sunday walk. We then proceed to pick him up, and he said he needed us to take him to his house to get the keys, and so that's what we did. And then I jumped in the back of the truck, and Jesse rode with him.
Yeah, so we drive to this old man's house.
Oh, you jumped
house.
In like the cab or the bed of the truck.
Yeah, to make room for Clarence. His name was Clarence.
Yeah,
and as soon as we picked up Clarence to go to his house, I jumped out of the truck and I said, guys, please let me handle Clarence. And I jumped out and I gave him, I looked him in the eye and I gave him a $20 bill right there. I said, Clarence, we're here for real business today. We want the good stuff. He slipped it in his pocket and started laughing. He's like, oh, I'll take care of you. So we were leaving his house and it's so Cameron and like it was you and Phil in the back, right, Cameron?
Yeah. And then you so, and Prop and Odd Thomas in the truck.
Yeah. So we're in the truck with him and he starts regaling us. And like one of the guys is the guy driving the truck, like our guide, is wearing like a South Carolina like Gamecocks hat. So apparently this guy had a lot of relatives that hailed from South Carolina. And he starts telling us about all the war veterans in his family and how they've heroically served the country. He then looked at Prop and he goes, now here's the bad part.
Oh boy.
Some of them were fighting for the South.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my gosh.
He's like, oh, you know,
sweet Prop.
He's like, a couple of them got beat by Grant and ended up going to prison down there. And remind you, he's talking about the Civil War here. That's how old this guy is.
Yeah.
That he literally had relatives that he knows that fought in the Civil War, ironically for the South. Prop was a pretty good sport about it.
Oh, I know.
Was he?
Yeah.
So we get, back to the fireworks place and we go in there. He's turning on the lights and everything. And we go in and we immediately go, do you got any illegal stuff? And he goes, well, we got some stuff we make here and we keep it behind the counter. And he pulls out this Ziploc bag of handmade what looked like bombs. Okay. And we go, what do those do? He goes, well, they're tannerite.
And
if
it looks like a bomb and it does explode and it's homemade.
And he goes, well, you want to see it? Here, I'll demo you one and come out with me. And so he takes this tannerite bomb. And he's 90 years old. He's shaky hands.
At this point, propaganda is just walking down the road towards home.
And so we just go out. And we're standing right in front of the door. In front of, there's a sidewalk right there. And we're just there and we're waiting to go. Where are we going to go out in the field? Whatever. He's standing right there next to us, lights it in his hand, and rolls it about 6 feet away from us just so we can see the explosion. And it was like, ooh, like this concussive like explosion right there. So then we go back in, and Jesse looks him dead in the eye, and he goes, where's the good stuff? And he literally looked to his left and his right, like, I don't know if I should tell him. And he goes, well, that stuff's downstairs. And he goes down and turns on the dungeon lights. And sure enough,
did y'all tell him you'd already been down there?
No.
The year before?
No. And he's given us a tour of the stuff that shouldn't have gotten through customs. He's like, this is the stuff that was overpacked. And most of the stuff gets rejected at customs, but this stuff slipped through. So on one hand, it's illegal. But on the other hand, it got through customs. So it's kind of legal. And that's what he's telling us. So he's telling us a tour of it all. And then he points to this one thing and he goes, this right here, these are three times more powerful than what we just did. And these right here are two times. And Jesse, of course, is egging him on. Can we see the three time one? Can we see the three time? All right.
And Cameron, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but the idea that getting something through customs is the basis of legality. Like, all right, well, right. I've got a dozen throwing stars through, so yeah, it's legal now. I can do that. It's just like amazing.
So then we go back outside, and he's got this three times more powerful thing. Again, he's 90 years old, and we go stand where we were standing the first time, and he goes, well, we got to move away from those glass doors right there. Last time I did this, I've blown those out three times. And we're like, oh, okay, after one time blowing it out, how do you blow it out the second and third time?
Right.
Anyway, so we go around the side of the building, and that's where Jesse starts getting really concerned.
I am, because this man cannot move very fast. He looks like he's tangoed with his share of dogs in his day, and they've taken the toll on the poor guy. He starts to light one. He goes, I think this one might be broken, but let's try it. He does it. He lights it. He puts it on the ground, and he starts like hobbling away. Cameron and the guys are like not a safe distance, because there is no safe distance with these types of explosives. But at a distance where I'm like, I might have to jump on Clarence here, like in a war movie, like a guy like jumping on top of someone for shrapnel. We're not going to let this old man die right here for us today. You know, he interrupt his Sunday morning walk for this. That thing, he set it off wrong, and it came, like, my back is turned running away from where the explosion's supposed to be. It comes blasting over my shoulder and hits what appears to be a fuel container in the parking lot.
On the other side of the parking lot. It went and just flew off and hit, like, where the cars were, and it turned out to be a water container, and it didn't detonate. So then he's like, oh, I'm so sorry it didn't detonate. Let me go get another one. And so he go gets another one, and the stick's broken off of it. So he just figured he'd turn it upside down and stick it in the ground. Like, And he goes and lights it. And then Jesse is literally like, hey, Clarence, I'll light it for you. You know, whatever. Cause he's over there hobbling, got a shaky hand and stuff. And there's like, it's not even ground or anything. So Jesse's trying to help him and Clarence lights it and they hobble away. And I'm telling you, this thing was a bomb. Dirt and mud was flung 100 feet in the air. It was unbelievable. It was like a war movie effect. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was like Saving Private Ryan when like the grenades are going off on the beaches of Normandy.
It was great.
Like we are sitting there and a half of us are like, you know what? We drove an hour to get here. I'm willing to take my chances with, you know, walking through the night through dogs to try to avoid getting my hand blown off here.
Yeah.
But listen, we're not going to be rude to the guy. I slipped him $20. He's doing this to give us a show.
And no one came. There was no police, no one.
No,
I mean, you think about in the normal world, if I set off a bomb in my yard, it would be news. It would be a whole thing.
Oh, no,
there,
it's Montana.
It's just the dogs don't even stop jumping through the fence. Everything goes on. Old man, whatever his name is setting off a bomb.
Clarence. And so then we bought hundreds of dollars of stuff and
Clarence.
He kept going. He was so excited about the sale. He kept finding damaged stuff behind the counter. And he's like, hey, you want this? And I asked him, well, what does that do? He goes, I don't know. You'll find out. And I was like, okay. You know, that kind of stuff. So
this sounds like a great idea.
It was amazing. So we just had all this fireworks and we drive back to the lodge and we just roll up triumphantly showing everybody the fireworks. And we had a fireworks party that night. Like it was nuts. Well, sure enough, with one of the big boxes, it's supposed to be like there's a wick and fuse and you light the one fuse and it just, you know, it'll have like 20 different things and it'll shoot up in the sky and it's like a whole show by itself in this one box. Well, that one of the damaged ones was missing the fuse. So we were trying to figure out how to get this box lit.
Oh gosh.
So we decided to just light a big old fire and then throw the box on top of it.
Yeah,
which was a great idea. And those things are just shooting everywhere. I shot a firework off that didn't go up very high and then exploded and shot into the house. It was great. We're running around for our lives. We're jumping through the flames. It was an incredible experience.
Yeah. I mean, people are looking at the boxes of clearly, you know, fireworks that have been imported from all over, you know, the list of banned countries. And at one point, someone pulls out a Ziploc bag, that has like little sticks of dynamite in it. He goes, what kind are these? He was like, oh, those are the kind they make there. And so he basically gave us fireworks in the same type of transaction I would assume you would do for a drug deal. Just Ziploc bags of like loosely handled, you know, sticks of dynamite and just flecks of gunpowder everywhere. But,
wonderful.
You know, Clarence knew what he was talking
about. Were they pretty? Like when they shot this guy, were they
gorgeous.
Pretty?
It would have been like an Annie F. Downs birthday party type fireworks extravaganza.
Yes.
It was incredible.
Lots of colors?
Incredible colors. And lots of different variety and, you know, and it was great.
And I bet when out in Montana where there's like not anything else on the horizon, it is just like so extravagant to see them go up.
Especially when they're kind of faulty and misfire and shoot off into the house. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
I've been chased by a firework before. I've had to dive out of the way of a firework before.
Oh, I got chased. I went to light one of the Clarence ones, one of the big ones on a stick, and it's supposed to shoot up in the sky and then explode.
one of the Clarence ones.
And I put it in some gravel loosely. And as I lit it, it fell back and pointed directly at me, lit. Mm-hmm. And I just started running for my life, screaming back at the house. I'm like running back for everybody. Everybody's scattering and stuff because that thing came right for us. But,
that's what you gotta do.
Annie, I don't know if the objectives was really beauty. I don't think that's what Clarence's going for.
No. I just want to know if that was a secondary advantage you building a fire and throwing fireworks into it.
After we were like, after we had lit and saw the pretty ones and stuff, then all of a sudden we bought so many. People started like zip tying and duct taping fireworks together like making mega explosions and stuff. That was a lot of fun.
I would say 100% my life hack for a 4th of July is buy, you know, the big boxes that you can find in the store that you like always wanted as a kid.
The combo pack. It's like a bunch of different ones and they're vacuum sealed.
Lay it on the ground and set the box on fire and see what happens. We do it every year and it is absolutely terribly dangerous and it is so fun.
Is it legal to buy fireworks in Florida?
You know what? That's an interesting question. Yes, it is. You can buy some fireworks in Florida, but they're lame-o. You really got to head up north to get the good stuff. You got to head to Clarence's, really.
Yeah. Clarence is the one.
It's, and you can get it all through customs. No problem.
Like, Clarence was almost like Clint Eastwood in The Mule. You know, like no one would suspect that this old man is the country's most prolific illegal fireworks smuggler.
That's
but
right,
somehow he had a basement wall to wall with them. You
except
know?
That everyone would expect that. It's one or the other.
We definitely got the impression that his son is the mastermind and the ringleader of this thing. And Clarence is just, maybe Clarence started it 50 years ago, but his son has taken it to another level. And Clarence isn't quite sure all that they have. You know,
I at some point, his son made the decision to dig out the bottom and create a firework lab Gus did for Walt White. You know, like under the laundromat is where the real business happens. That's how this fireworks stand is. Like, you know, you can get the sparklers and the poppers upstairs. Yeah. You want to get the military grade stuff. You got to be willing to go down to the dungeon, and not everyone who's gone down there has come back.
I mean, there was one other customer there while we were there, and he got, you know, $40 of stuff for his kids and stuff. Clarence didn't tell him about downstairs. I mean, this is a special access situation.
So once y'all opened it up, someone else stopped by to shop.
Yeah. I was like, hey, look for Clarence. Look at Clarence. We got him more business.
Yeah. And Clarence kind of gave us a look like, play it cool, guys. Play it cool. Right. Like, don't let that, you know, like.
Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talked to the Japanese house. Tyler Huckabee is going to join us to tell us about his conversation with Amber Bain about how she overcame personal struggles. And that led to the creation of her acclaimed debut album. It's called Good at Falling. Well, with that, let's move the show along. Stay tuned. Up next. Be slices. So will you wait for me? Will you wait for me? Will you wait for me? My evergreen. You're listening to Yebba. The song is Evergreen. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard our guest today, the Japanese house, with Maybe You're the Reason. Well, today's show is brought to you by Samaritan Ministries, a healthcare sharing ministry with over 250,000 Christians caring for one another's needs from broken bones to cancer, pregnancies to organ transplants, all without the use of insurance. It's the time of year that people start planning vacations and getting outside more. That means wherever you go, whatever you're doing, everyone wants the comfort of knowing help is there if something goes wrong. If your current healthcare option has gotten out of hand with crazy prices and difficult network restrictions, why not ditch it for actual health care with Samaritan Ministries, a growing community of Christians that send financial gifts and pray for one another throughout medical needs. In this way, Samaritan members care for the whole person, physically, spiritually, and financially. Plus, there's no restrictions at Samaritan Ministries as to when you can join or even which doctors you can see after you join. If you'd like to learn more about how you can be part of this ministry helping each other with health care, visit SamaritanMinistries.org/relevant. Awesome organization. Okay, it's time for slices. What do you have, Jesse?
Okay, guess what, guys? We got a twofer, and I don't care. Go ahead, Eddie.
You know when I realized that you were always going to have a twofer? When I looked for the first time in my life at, apparently, the Relevant Podcast has a lovely store of merchandise. Right. And there's a mug that says, we've got a twofer. I thought, oh, I see.
I just put
he
that up
said
on
it
Thursday.
So much, it's become a mug.
Yeah. We've merchandised it.
My favorite this week was someone on Twitter said, quoted Jesus saying, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, I've got a twofer.
You know, I'll be quoted by, you know, the big man. I don't care. It's true. There's wisdom. There's a method to my madness, because these are equally fascinating items to talk about.
Sure.
Eddie, I'm going to give you the choice for which one you want me to start with. One about the greatest album cover of all time, or one about a mystery meat contest. Your call.
Oh, they go mystery meat.
I'll start with the mystery meat. So for the second year in a row, Pringles, is launching a new competition. And I love the marketing people at Pringles for coming up with this. You know, it's a way to get people talking about Pringles. And, you know, if you're not in the mood for Pringles, but you feel like you have pretty sophisticated taste buds, you could put yourself in the running for $10,000 in cold, hard cash. Ooh. So, starting this week at Walgreens stores around the country. And by the way, I love that they partnered with Walgreens for this, a pharmacy, a place where conceivably people go after the doctor to get medicine to try to restore their health. That's where Pringles is shoving cans of mystery meat onto the racks. And it is enticing people to not only purchase, but eat for $10,000. So a pharmacy, basically like a doctor adjacent place, will be the host of this contest. You can go to your local Walgreens from now through August and you can buy a can of mystery flavor Pringles. Now, here's how it works. You buy a can of mystery flavor Pringles, you eat them, and you go to a website and you start making your guesses as to what the Pringles flavor is. Now, it's kind of a blank slate, and it's actually super, super hard. The only hint is there is sort of a hint this year because they let it, you know, go to like some food writers around the country first to kind of let them seed the, you know, get the public talking. And the consensus was a meat is involved in the flavor and possibly a cheese. So it's there's some sort of meat involved in this mystery flavor. But the tough thing is, like, these are super, super specific, right? So it's not just like, oh, this Pringles tastes like a hot dog. It's not going to be that easy, or a chili dog or whatever. So some of the other flavors they have is sweet chili tango, which I don't even know. Tango doesn't even seem like a flavor. That's a dance move, right?
That's a dance move.
Yeah. Oh, so it's very specific.
Confirmed.
Here. Jamaican jerk. Jalapeno bacon. Last year, any guesses? Any guesses to what the $10,000 prize award-winning Pringle mystery flavor was last year? That sparked
and
a nation.
It's meat related.
Yeah, last year's was not necessarily meat related. Let me say
shrimp,
that
shrimp, prawn nope. Chips are good.
Eddie.
No. Ooh, no. All I can think of is somebody a couple of years ago sent us ketchup Lays, ketchup flavored Lays, and they were magical. But I can't imagine that's what they use.
Ketchup potato chips?
Yes, they're actually good. I've had them, too.
They sent them to the studio. They were very magical chips. Right, I was thinking about them.
Here's a hint towards last year's. There's layers of complexity here.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Cuban sandwich.
Nope.
Annie? Oh, I like what you're doing. layers of complexity. You went Cuban sandwich. I'm going lasagna.
Cameron, what do you think last year's mystery flavor was?
Enchilada.
Enchilada. You guys are... Cameron, you're actually the closest. It was seven-layer dip last year.
Dude, I think that's so good.
Seven-layer dip was the mystery meat. Yeah, I mean, somehow they packed seven layers of flavor into one chip. So you can go to your local...
It's proof in those moments that there isn't a real ingredient in that. Like, there's just, it's some powder that they're like, all right, that tastes like a bean, a little more of that powder, the sour cream powder. There's nothing real in all of it. Like, how is it possible?
I have a theory that they just got a bunch of powders from all of these other insane flavors and just jammed them all on one chip and be like, I have no idea what this tastes like, but we'll pick the one that has the best name at the end.
And it's all just suggestive. So you read the bag, you're like, okay, seven layer dip. And then you bite it and you're like, I can taste it. Yeah,
I can find
Give me some of the nacho tater tot powder, some of the jalapeno tango,
nacho tater tot,
sweet chili surprise.
That's so gross.
Yeah, mashed potatoes and gravy. Let's get all the flavors and just stir them up and make a big stew. So that genius marketing campaign is one of the twofer. Okay, the second is about an interesting trend. So we're kind of coming out of an era of like the Bible movie. You know, we had like Rooney Mara on recently for the Mary Magdalene film. We've had kind of this run of interesting Bible-based films. But the tide is turning a little from movies about, you know, based on Bible characters to movies based on Christian figures. So we talked about on one of the Friday shows about how they're making a movie about Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and the rise and fall of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
I can't
Andrew
wait
Garfield,
for this.
Yeah. Jessica Chastain. So now a new biopic about religious figures has been announced. It is in the work, and it's a Really great name, especially when you learn the context. This film will be called Satan is Real. The movie is called Satan is Real.
I saw this.
Which sounds like one of those weird like horror movies that you just stumble on Netflix, you know, like one of those straight to DVD. So Satan is Real is actually the name of a classic gospel album by the Lovin' Brothers. Most people probably haven't heard the Satan is Real by the Lovin' Brothers, but it is the coolest album cover of all time. It depicts a giant, probably 20-foot Satan with a pitchfork standing in a pile of lava with two guys in white, like Colonel Sanders suits with their arms wide open singing. It was released in the 1950s. And so these guys evidently had a pretty colorful past, but were known for their gospel music. So they're going to join Jim and Tammy Faye Baker as another religious figure biopic coming out or in development right now. It's going to star Ethan Hawke. But I wanted to ask you guys, because I think these are great, interesting projects. And I'm going to seed this one a little. If you had to have a movie about a interesting contemporary religious figure, who would it be and who would it play? Cameron, I think personally, the ORU story, you know, the Richard and Oral Roberts rise and fall is made for a Hollywood.
Well, they kind of did that with the Carlton Pearson movie last year that Ira Glass was producing.
Yeah, I mean, they were a part of it, but it wasn't only about, like, I think one about their father and some relationship and sort of like, you know, after he handed it off to Richard. And they
even the whole in the 80s when, you know, Earl was, you know, trapped himself in the tower saying God told him to raise $8 million before he could come down, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy stories.
What?
Yep.
Yeah. And it worked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he at one time during a fundraising campaign locked himself in the prayer tower and said if he didn't raise $8 million by the end of the month, he felt like the Lord was going to call him home. And I've already cast this.
Oh, my gracious.
Yeah,
I've already cast this. Wait, before we judge, did it work?
Yeah,
it did work.
Okay, you guys, I have an announcement to make. Yep.
the other interesting part about this, before Richard Roberts like took over as like a televangelist, you know what his profession was? Cameron, you know. He was a Vegas lounge singer.
Yep. When he was rebelling.
Yeah. So you have these parallel stories, and I've already cast it, guys. Okay, you ready for this? Rich Oral Roberts, obviously, will be Daniel Day-Lewis in, you know, the old man face. Yeah.
He's retired.
You're going to get him to unretire for this, to come out of retirement.
Are you
going
to get Paul Thomas Anderson to write it?
I mean, why not?
Yes.
You kind of have to.
Incredible.
That's the only way we get Daniel Day on board.
Yeah.
You know? You know, he likes those family generational dramas. There's kind of There Will Be Blood, you know, relationship dynamic there. Okay, here's Richard, guys. Hugh Jackman. Here's why he's a song and dance man. Slicking that hair back, doing his, what was that horrible dancing, singing movie that everyone liked?
You're the worst.
He's done several. But
no, you're the worst. You're talking about the greatest showman.
Exactly. Mine, okay, here's one more. Cameron, Heritage USA. Did you ever go there as a kid?
Yeah.
They had a water park, didn't they?
Yeah. We talked about this like literally a week ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is like a high school summer camp movie, like What Hot American Summer, Adventureland, you know, kind of the stereotypical, except it's a lifeguard at Heritage USA.
The summer workers at Heritage USA. And so you see the lens of the whole Tammy Faye and all that empire, but through the lens of a kind of basically a youth group college kid.
Exactly.
Working. That's interesting.
Yeah, Zac Efron in there. I mean, it's perfect. Yes, that's kind of the head, you know, bad boy lifeguard. Like
he's too muscly. I wouldn't buy him as like a church guy. You know what I mean? He's too good.
I mean, if Jesse Eisenberg hadn't already done Adventureland, he's the kind of guy. You know?
That's right.
A little kind of nerdy, you know.
Not a church guy that does like P90X and is really like ripped and all that. Like that guy.
It needs to be someone who's plausibly currently homeschooled. You know, you know who'd be great in this? You know who'd be great in this is Jonah Hill.
My gosh.
Jonah Hill. Foul mouth Jonah Hill. Like, I would watch him in this movie.
But old school Jonah Hill. Just let him really run wild.
Yeah. You know, let's just bring in
like
a Michael
North Korea movie level Jonah Hill.
Like the high school one. What was that?
Yeah, like super bad.
You know,
super
let's bad. Just bring Michael Cera and Jonah Hill back together for a movie where they're lifeguards at Heritage USA. I would totally, everyone would see it. It's great. It's got multiple layers. It's a 7-layer Pringle of layers and flavors. I'm totally in for it. Eddie, what is your idea for this?
Well, and I think there's one, obviously, the story of DC Talk, which there's something still that we uncovered, and we spent probably 3 years on the show talking about what happened. The fact that they have not officially broken up, but they don't do music, yet they all care about each other. There is a story there that has yet to be uncovered. I don't know who would play it. Obviously, I would probably be asked to play Kevin by Kevin, personal friend. Though then the second one is, I would say, the Holy Land Experience. A comedy about the Holy Land Experience, the theme park in Orlando. We've talked about this, about the theme park in Orlando. And like how it happens, like I feel like it's a Christopher Guest movie with the backstage of like all of them coming out of character. And like Jesus is just like super frustrated because like there was supposed to be water out there that he's supposed to change into wine and there wasn't. And he's just having a tirade. Like that's a funny
movie. Christopher Guest movie about the Holy Land Experience. I'm down with that. Like the workers from the Holy Land.
That's
experience.
A funny movie.
I would see that.
I have a different idea for your Holy Land one. Okay.
Okay.
We need to John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell struck out in that Watson and Holmes movie. We need another vehicle for them to, and it's going to have to be, it's going to be a hard R like Step Brothers, but they are two reenactors at the Holy Land and things get wild. I would watch, I would watch John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell play Holy Land employees. I mean, these are all gold ideas. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. With a Mark Wahlberg coming in there every once in a while to do a little bit of his thing.
You know, they're all like, other than DC Talk, they're all touching on the televangelist era of Christianity. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's as if there's something very comedic about it or strange that's
well,
to be uncovered.
HBO is making that show, The Righteous Gemstones, which stars Danny McBride as the heir apparent to like a televangelism empire.
Oh, I
mean,
the whole
world is ripe for comedy. I just, what has taken so long is the question. Like, there hasn't been a great televangelism movie since that, like, it wasn't Steve Martin in one back in the day.
Yeah. The Keeping the Faith? Maybe.
Yeah, but that wasn't just straight up comedy.
It was more like the tent revival thing. And it was just a weird mixture. They took all these like religious stereotypes and put it in a blender, and somebody who had never experienced it or seen it for themselves wrote this movie.
It was like 50s, 60s country preacher kind of thing. I guess in a modern setting, but they really need to do like they need to get right into the mid 90s. There needs to be four Tauruses driving down the street.
Right.
You know, like it's got to be
1986
and
1994 is the prime time of what
prime
we're talking about.
Time.
I love it. Yeah.
Dude, absolutely. That Oral Roberts though, that's a heck of an idea. I mean, you can see the opening shot of the movie is him in the bell tower.
Yeah.
Like just sitting there sweating.
I could see it being like a serious movie, like not a spoof, not a joke, but like dramatic and, like it humanizes this, you know, controversial figure, and like I could see it being really compelling.
Yeah,
I also think this. We should also mention that there are some women that could be in movies because we haven't done that yet. So maybe like a Joyce.
Well, Jan Crouch would clearly be in the Holy Land Experience one.
Yeah, if we did a Joyce Meyer one, we could do Meryl Streep as Joyce Meyer. Can you imagine?
That's a fantastic call.
Maybe a little Devil Wears Prada feel. I don't know.
But what's the crazy story of Joyce Meyer? Like all these were like crazy people who went away.
You know, she got kicked out of a church. I mean, she has an insane story.
I will say, to the credit of women, I think there may not just be as many completely horrific females in history as men who have just completely bulldozed over, you know, everything. Yeah. So I'm just saying, it may not have been because we're awful. It may have been because we're
awful.
Oh,
get out of here. I was not saying you were awful.
That's what I heard.
Annie, I totally see and understand your point. But yeah, in the world of televangelists, much less fewer women have humiliated themselves and created a bad name for the church than men have. So
we just haven't been given the leadership or the time. Just give us leadership and give us time, and we'll do it too.
Well, I have a feeling women would handle it much better than men have.
You think?
To their credit. Yeah, I don't think there would be as many horrific comedies coming from it if more women were in positions of leadership and influence as
like
men have butchered over the last 30 years.
Ooh, we could do a movie about Amy Grant and how I met her one time.
You can do a cameo.
But we do it through the lens of Eddie, young Eddie, like aspiring to meet her one day.
And I don't even know who's going to play me now. I was supposed to be played by John C. Reilly, and now I don't know who could possibly do it now.
Kevin Max.
Oh, that's a great point, friend.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea.
You know, yeah. I got heckled off the stage one time at a Christian cruise on open night, mic night, doing stand up by a woman named Geraldine and her dummy named Ricky. And by, I mean dummy, I don't mean a sidekick. I mean, she was a ventriloquist. So I would watch the Geraldine and Ricky story. Absolutely.
Okay.
And I'm pretty, you know, I did back in the day, I had a listicle of like the craziest Christian album covers of all time. There were like four women with women ventriloquists on there. That was a big genre back in the day. Female ventriloquist gospel albums. And the great, you know, the charming thing about them, thing about them is the woman would sing a voice and then the dummy would sing a verse. And impressively, when they perform it live, her lips aren't moving. You know, it is quite the show. Quite the show. Does not translate on vinyl like most people consume then. It just sounded like terrible mousy singing when the dummy was singing.
Right.
But
right.
still an interesting novelty.
Sorry, what do you have, Eddie?
I mean, who knows at this point? So the Muppets, Sesame Street. I love that they are, you know, they take their responsibility of educating children very seriously, and they have introduced a new character. And her name is Carly, and Carly is a friend of Elmo's. And Carly, I don't know how to describe her, but she has green fur.
She's
I do know how to describe her.
Yeah, she's green.
She has green fur and little spiky yellow hair, and she looks like a Muppet with her little sweet ping pong eyes.
What do you mean? You don't, all Muppets look the same. She's a different color. She looks like a green Muppet.
That's a great point. She looks like a Muppet with green fur and yellow hair.
I don't know how to describe this. Imagine like Elmo or literally any other Muppet. But green. That's pretty accurate, actually. It's
in a video of Carly, Carly's episode is coming up, but in a video of Carly, Carly's foster mom explains to Elmo that Carly's mom, the biological mother, is having a hard time and that they will keep her safe until the mom can take care of her again. And so what Sesame Street is doing is, in honor of May, which is National Foster Care Month in the United States, they have brought in a character that has foster, that is in foster care, to teach Elmo and to teach kids about kids in foster care, which is really interesting because my daughters are just learning about it because they go to public school and they hear kids' stories and they chat about it. And almost every single day, I mean, you know, Cameron, you must have this as well. Like, they get in the car having been exposed to something new in the world and they have questions about it. And I just appreciate Sesame Street because they are bringing in a new character, Carly. And also, Carly happens to be really funny and fun. So it's not just this like terribly sad story. They also did, for what it's worth, in 2000, I think it was 2011, they brought in a character named Lily, and Lily was homeless. And so they were able to explain homelessness through the character of Lily.
Yeah. What a special show.
I love it. Listen, it is so magical.
Another underrepresented group that could be immortalized by Muppets. And that is weird televangelism couples from the 90s. I could see it. It would be very easy to make the eyeshadow. I mean, they're basically, a lot of them already dress like human Muppets anyway. So these would be very easily translatable to the Sesame Street screen, and they would really tease up maybe some sort of cross promo for these films we're working on, because like I said, they basically dress like Muppets as it is. So
it really is. So I was
one of the big churches here in Nashville because it's Foster Care Month, talked about it on Sunday and really challenged their congregation. They were like, 70% of the kids in our county are fostered outside of our county because there aren't enough foster families. Let's step up and let's be the church and start fostering kids. I mean, like, it was a really cool, I it's not my church, but I read about it and I thought, man, that is really, to see the church step in as well and go, yeah, we can do this. This is hard work, but we can do this, and we can help the kids that are our neighbors.
Yeah, there are 440,000 kids in the foster care system in the United States. So that is almost a 500,000 kids that do not have a place to, you know, that they can call home. And so it is just a really incredible thing that, like, there must be foster parents listening, and they are legit heroes, like the greatest people on earth. And
there's probably people thinking about fostering listening and hear us say yes.
Yes, it is an incredible thing.
Take care of those kids.
All right, what do you have, Annie?
Well, let's just keep it light and breezy. And let's talk about engagement rings, you guys. It's springtime. Everybody's falling in love and getting engaged. Yeah. I bring to you a slice that millennials, actually 2/3 of Generation Z and young millennials, think an engagement ring should cost less than $2,500. The average engagement ring cost $5,680.
No.
Wow. Yes. And so the generations coming up behind us, the younger millennials, Generation Z, are all kind of going like, hey, I don't need a ring that costs almost $6,000. Let's go less than half of that. And 4 out of 10 millennial couples are planning on paying for their own wedding.
Wow. Yeah, I could see that. That's awesome. Good for them.
Yeah, I think so too.
The super expensive engagement ring thing has always struck me as interesting because, like, well, one, it's like, it's symbolically, obviously, is very important, but it's also like conspicuous consumption, right? I mean, mm-hmm. at the surface level, it's like, mm-hmm. hey, this is something that has no utility, right? It doesn't do anything. It's just something I wear to that looks fancy.
Kind of a status symbol.
Yeah, exactly.
To symbolize an excellent love. Bond yeah. and commitment. Yeah.
But can't you, but my point is, like, it doesn't just symbolize a bond and commitment. It also symbolizes wealth, right?
Yes.
Like, and status. Yeah. Like, what's the,
oh, sure.
like,
yep.
like, can't I'm you symbolize you. Wealth and eternal love with, like, an $800 ring versus, like, a $5,000? Like, does it
and
make
if any, if anybody thinks a $5,000 ring, like, somehow equates to more commitment than a $200, $500, $1,000 ring, just does not understand what the real commitment's going to look like.
That buying is such a strong ring, statement to make. Buying a ring, bought rings.
Well, if you like a ring and you want a ring and you have money, that's great. But to think that it's at all correlated, like, to the quality of marriage is, like, not even a possibility.
Amy, what's your opinion about this trend? I'm very interested.
I am the only one here who hasn't participated in buying or receiving an engagement ring.
Yes.
And so I would say I agree. I don't. When I get engaged, I am not looking at the size of the ring to determine the yes or the no in the story.
Yeah.
But I'm in this exact same camp of, like, no, there isn't, like, a number you need to have spent. You know, there is some, what's the old saying that's supposed to be 3 months of the guy's salary.
What was the Michael Scott thing that
Michael
he messed
Scott
up?
Like, listen, I paid 3 years salary for that.
Oh, that's right.
Michael Scott, great with his personal finance.
Yeah. The thing that isn't outlined in this article that I'd be interested to hear y'all's take on is, is this affected by, or has this stat been affected by, people getting married a little bit older than they did 20 years ago? Is that why more people feel like they independently are going to pay for their wedding? Is that why they don't want to spend money on an engagement ring? Is that a factor here?
Funny, because the engagement ring doesn't make as much sense to me, because I bought a ring that was very appropriately priced for a 24 and 23 year old who had just gotten out of grad school and had zero money. It was mm-hmm. like, okay, well, that wasn't irresponsible, but that was also the most expensive thing I've ever bought. Like, but now I look at it, I'm like, I think I could have maybe done, like, if I was, like, doing this now, I would have spent more money. But the paying for the wedding thing, so to me, I feel like as you would get older, you would pay more money for the ring. But the getting older thing explains the paying for your own wedding, because it does feel like maybe they're just, they're kind of just fully done with the exchange of money between their parents.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you're getting married at 30, it's weird that now mom and dad are paying for your wedding. That's strange.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you, I'm going to get married after 30, and my parents have always said that they would offer to help pay or whatever, and paid to have saved up. And I think it'll be an interesting conversation of, like, I'm almost 40, or I am 40, depending on when I get married. And y'all, this is way past when you thought this was going to be part of what you were going to do. You know, like, I think it will be a conversation that maybe wouldn't have happened 20 years ago.
Yeah. That being said, having two daughters, if they get married, if they decide that's something they want to do, if they ever do get married, I would be proud to be able to support
for sure
their significant other, even if it's not in traditional ways, like, hey, I'll
My
send
dad
you on a honeymoon.
Feel the same way.
I just feel proud about it, but I don't think they need it. And if they don't want it, I'll gladly swallow my pride and just you know, be.
Yeah, my dad will my dad will be very happy to be a part of paying for my wedding.
But I do think the trend is probably indicative of like, you know, like the whole like Arrested Development phenomenon, you know, of like, you know, to some degree, there are, you know, millennials who aren't moving out of their parents' homes till like later in life. Like, I don't think that's because of like expensive wedding rings, but I think like expectations projected on this generation by Generation Z projected onto them by previous generations. Like, well, here's the expectations. You got to have a wedding that costs thousands, you know, and you got to buy a ring that costs this, and you got to have this and that and this, or else you're not ready to move on. And it's like, well, some of those just aren't the financial realities anymore. You know, like like, you know, a lot of our parents' generation weren't saddled with, you know, six figures of student debt, you know, and it wasn't as impractical to purchase a, you know, $5,000 diamond.
But if you go back to that marketing campaign, De Beers in the 80s and 90s, that said that you should spend 3 months of your salary on an engagement ring. If you look at that, I mean, and let's say $6,000 right now, it's somebody making $24,000 a year. That is absolutely insane that industry would have suggested that. If you look at the number now, 5,800, whatever you said, and everybody's waiting later, and let's say, you know, when you're in your 30s and you're getting married now, maybe you're making $50,000 a year. If you're going to spend $5,700, that's like 1 month's salary. That's 10%. Yeah, right. So it's actually more like economical. It's more, you know, like all the things that we're saying from a value standpoint. You know, it's just like the sticker shock of that huge, you know, whatever. But I mean, if it's proportionally less of your salary because you're older now and earning more, I mean, it's better than spending it when you're making 24 grand.
I would rather receive something that is actually usable. If someone's like, listen, obviously I was on the other side of this, but if it was like socially normal for the woman to give the guy a piece of jewelry, or they could buy like a jet ski of the equivalent value, I'd be like, yes, we'll get married. Thank you for the jet ski. This is awesome. What a gift. What a gift.
100%.
Women should propose with jet skis.
I'm saying if women propose to men for an item that's going to cost thousands of dollars, I don't need something I can just. I don't need. Or
if I have to like choose a Segway.
Segway. I'm just saying some kind of motorized vehicle that costs
jewelry
the equivalent.
And a cool dune buggy. I choose the dune buggy all day long.
This dune buggy will be the symbol of our eternal love. And it's like, yes, it will.
Yes, it will. And I love you. You do know me.
You truly understand me.
You're the only person that's ever gotten me.
All right. That'll do it for Sizes. Stay tuned. Up next, the Japanese house joins us. And the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't want to live like this, but I don't want to die. Hey, thanks for listening to the show today. If you like the Relevant Podcast, make sure to check out our other podcasts. We have Relevant Daily every weekday. It's about 10 minutes long, and it brings you the stories you need to know at the intersection of faith and culture. It's kind of the most trending stories that we're covering each day at Relevant. Check it out. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Also, my long-form conversation podcast called Unedited with Cameron Strang is out this week. We have this unbelievable conversation with Joel Houston from Hillsong United. You definitely don't want to miss that. So go check out Unedited and Relevant Daily. Beneath these velvet gloves I hide the shameful crooked ends of a moneylender. Cause I still remember. You're listening to Vampire Weekend. The song is Harmony Hall. It's their new single. And it would have made a lot more sense for me to probably play the Japanese house track in that break. But oh well. Amber Bain is a songwriter and artist who performs under the name Japanese House. She's drawn critical acclaim for her debut album, Good at Falling. Incredible. In a conversation with our very own Tyler Huckabee, she opened up about a dark period in her life that led to the creation of the album, the personal realizations she had along the way, and how songwriting has ended up being a form of therapy for her. It's a great album and an emotionally honest interview. Tell us about it, Tyler.
Yeah, well, I think you guys know I'm a big Japanese House fan, so I was really looking forward to this conversation, and it didn't disappoint. I was super pumped that Amber was willing to talk to me kind of about the circumstances that led to this this album. As she was, as we were talking, she talked about she referenced a dark period in her life that was involved in the creation of this. So I asked her to delve into that a little more specifically, and this is what she said about that.
It's all about relationships, whether that's my relationship with someone else or my relationship with myself. And as I was writing the album, it's a time where my relationship with myself completely changed, like, or at least I acknowledged that I had to change it. Well, I think, like, I recognised that I actually probably hated myself quite a lot. Like, there's a song called Everybody Hates Me on the album, which when I originally wrote was like, oh, it's basically like a hangover anthem, because it's the feelings that you feel when you're hungover. Like you wake up and, well, that's how I feel pretty much every day, be like, oh, I've ruined my life and everyone hates me. Like, I'm just a piece of crap. But actually, like, everyone didn't hate me. I hated me. And yeah, that song's still very much about my relationship with alcohol in a way. But actually, it's more of a commentary on how I feel about myself. Like, I was making myself feel like that every day.
Tyler, is that... was such a powerful admission from her to not only talk about a struggle with, you know, self-image and self-hatred, but about how it's kind of self-perpetuating because of her relationship with a, you know, ultimately like a substance abuse. That's got to be kind of a difficult conversation to have from your perspective, Tyler.
Well, I was surprised because a lot of times people who struggle with alcohol or substance abuse will sort of dance around it in these interviews. But Amber was very, very open about the complications that she's had, the complicating relationship she has with alcohol and the ways that she's trying to address that and the way that she's been trying to overcome it. And so a question that I had for her was whether or not being as honest and as vulnerable as she was on this new album on Good at Falling was actually helpful. Like, was this something that helped her get into that struggle and maybe find a way through it? And here's how she answered that question.
I think when I first write, like, I don't feel the initial effect of writing songs being therapeutic. Like, I don't feel that at all. But I think there must be some positive effect in the long run after having expressed something, like, because I'm very good at, like, squashing my emotions. No, I am. I don't like to deal with things head on very often. When they're particularly painful, I don't like to confront issues. So I guess there is something positive about writing a song and, like, confronting it. But, like, I don't enjoy the process and I don't feel good afterwards. I guess it's like when I go to therapy, I don't feel like catharsis or any sort of release afterwards. Like, I feel worse. But I guess it's like when you're exercising, you're like, after you start exercising for the first time in ages again, like, your body hurts and, like, everything hurts afterwards. But, like, in the long run, you know you're doing good for yourself. That's the only way I can sort of describe it.
I think I've definitely had that. I've had that experience with therapy and counseling a number of times where you go in hoping that this is going to help you feel a little better, but it ends up when you leave, because of all the excavation you've done on your emotional health and your mental health, you end up feeling worse. And so I admire her for being as honest again as she was about this idea that writing about these things, it'd be easy for her to say, like, yeah, this helps me process what I'm going through. But in actuality, at least initially, it doesn't. It actually does the opposite.
That's been my experience with exercise as well.
No, but
I
just avoid it entirely. I squash my physical need for making my body healthy. I squash it. You know, I just eat cheeseburgers for pie. No, but I do feel like that's honestly, for a lot of people, like, a really healthy way to look at mental and emotional health issues, whether it's something like addiction or self-image, to you know, it's like we've kind of, you know, I've heard, I think Jamie made the analogy recently in a conversation you were having with him, Cameron, where it's like, look, if you, you know, break your arm, you're fine going to the doctor. If something isn't feeling right mentally or emotionally, you should be able to seek treatment for that. And for her to kind of associate therapy with a hard workout, I think it is a very healthy way to approach that topic.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was interesting because what I told her then is that I feel like whether or not it's been helpful for her, there's definitely a lot of examples of people who listen to music like this and it helps them, because even if it's not necessarily therapeutic for you to excavate these feelings on paper in a studio, it's definitely helpful to hear them and to know that in some ways you're not alone, that other people out there are struggling with these same issues. And when I told her that, this is how she responded.
I'm glad that that you feel that way. That makes me happy. But and I guess it works the other way around too, because when anyone likes my songs or comes up to me and says like, oh, this, I feel that, you know, like it's working the same way for me. Like I'm like, oh, there's other people that feel the same, you know, that haven't figured it out. And I guess, yeah, that maybe that's a way in which writing is therapeutic, is other people's reactions to it make me feel better about my life.
So I thought that was a nice, it was a positive full of kind of a 180 there for her to realize that there is something useful sometimes, at least about recognizing that other people listening to her music means she's not alone too. And I think it's a really powerful album. I've been listening to a lot since it came out, and I'd encourage you all to go check it out. Yeah. It's Good at Falling. Very from cool. The Japanese House.
There you go. And also there's a feature on the Japanese House in the new issue of Relevant, if you want to go even more in depth in that conversation. So check it out. It's on newsstands nationwide, and also you can view it at relevantmagazine.com. Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, guys.
All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback. Listening to Local Natives. The song is When Am I Gonna Lose You? Well, last week we asked you to tell us about your youth group or mission trip stories gone wrong. We got talking about street evangelism that maybe didn't land the way that the people might have thought, and some things went a little left. And we thought, well, if you grew up in the church, you probably went out on missions and outreaches and stuff. And we want to know your stories. Here are a few of our favorites.
I like the spirit of Allison's old youth leader. Like, yeah, I like where his head is at. I think he just overestimated his youth group goers, because he said his high school youth group leader decided to have a youth group meet on Friday nights. So it's typically Wednesday nights. When I was growing up, that was the standard. But this youth leader wanted to reach the community. So he's going to have the youth group meet on Friday nights in the middle of downtown. And by this, I mean the office space that is essentially between two bars. The idea that it would draw kids in who wouldn't be interested in a church group. That's exactly what people out on a Friday night bar hopping are doing, is wandering into random old office spaces to see if people are praying in there. Like it's misguided from the get go. I think this youth
and
pastor,
if it's youth group, I mean, the people going to bars would be age inappropriate to join your service.
Right. Like, what are they going to come and confess? I think my theory here is Allison's youth leader likes to go out on Friday night and just saved him the drive after church. Like he's like, all right, kids, great tonight. And he's, you know, party time. You know, he's, you know, time to pregame. And, you know, while you get parents come to pick you up. Okay. He said this mission was accomplished, but an unanticipated consequence. So I guess some non-church kids were wandering into this office space. But the unintended consequences included church kids enjoying unrestricted access to drugs, alcohol, and more than one of us climbing out the window to get on the deck of a very popular bar next door. My sister and husband are now the youth pastors of the same church, and we still shake our heads wondering how anybody thought this was a good idea. Needless to say, they're back to meeting at the church. I mean, I
beautiful.
I wish my youth group was that cool. Like that would have been a lot of fun. I would have jumped over rooftops to get to the balcony of a establishment next door to get out of, you know,
Kim's ever. Youth leader sounds like if Jesse was a youth leader. It said, Kim said, our youth leader just sent us to McDonald's instead of doing Sunday school.
Amen.
Like, at what point did that guy just stop caring? You know?
Right. Yeah. This one's from Emily. This is unbelievable.
And I believe, Annie, it speaks to your point from earlier that we tried to make. So, yeah, you read this. How awesome guys are.
Oh, no. Stop. Not that Emily. I'm going for another Emily.
Oh, I'm going to read the other one. You go.
This Emily says, I was once at a community dinner where a group of short-term missionaries told a Native American community we wouldn't be eating dinner until people accepted Jesus. Oh. My Native neighbors sitting around me started snickering and poking their friends saying, raise your hand.
Oh, what a generous reply.
But I was going to say, is the very definition of manipulation. You know, Well, I mean, what a terrible
idea. What a terrible thing. Ugh, that's horrible.
So the other Emily, who I just, I think really encapsulates a lot, said, I was a missionary that hosted short-term missions. I had white men lead trips, and 5 minutes after, they would show up and say, I know what you need. And I had lived in my community for 3+ years, but this brand new man clearly knew what I needed. And I would just like to say, that's why the movies get made about white guys, not Emily.
Yeah. Mansplaining white dude missionaries. Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Hey, Emily, thank you, by the way, for your mission work and your careful approach. That doesn't involve a dude just assuming that this, this community would like to see a mimed presentation of a fist fight between Jesus and the devil, which I feel like that that was like 90% of evangelical churches' strategy for winning over people who probably already knew about Jesus was to simply just mime a Matrix fight with one guy in a black t-shirt and one guy with the white t-shirt. And you guys can figure out.
Just incredible.
The details are really immaterial there.
All right, that'll do it for your feedback. There's a lot more where that came from. Go check it out. Okay, it's time for this week's
editorial question of the week.
Well, this one's kind of obvious. Earlier in the show, we got talking about Christian figure biopics, and we want to know who you want to see. Jesse brought a few ideas, but I think there's a lot more that is possible as well.
Sadly, there are very many hilarious comedies in there.
Hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast, or you can post your longer Christian figure biopic ideas on the podcast episode page at relevantmagazine.com. Well, many thanks to Samaritan Ministries for making the show possible. If you want to learn more about how you can be a part of this ministry helping each other with health care, visit samaritanministries.org/relevant. Also, thanks to the Japanese House for joining us. Their new album, Good at Falling, is out now, and you can follow them on Twitter at Japanese House. Well, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Chandler String.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Eddie Koffeltz.
And I'm Annie F. Downs.
We will see you on Friday. Have a good week, everyone. Searching for some kind of meaning. Apathy's a funny feeling. Thank you for listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe. Keep looking for something, even though I know that it's not there. And every time I try to figure it out, you're the only thing I can think about. And a dummy named Ricky. And by I mean dummy, I don't mean a sidekick. I mean she was a ventriloquist. Relevant Podcast Network.